You're listening to Metropolitan Opera Radio on Sirius XM. I'm Margaret Jontwaite. William Berger is with me. And we're opening the season. It is the first performance of the 2011-2012 season. And we're beginning with something that the Met has never performed before. And that is Gaetano Donizetti's version of the story, a little portion of the story, of the second wife of Henry VIII, Anne Boleyn. It's really a pivotal moment in her life where he has decided, she hasn't given me a male heir. He's grown tired of her. It's been 3 years.
Whatever his unfathomable reasons are, she's out.
He's found someone else to take her place. Right. And he has decided how he's getting rid of her. We don't know. Has he concocted a belief that she has been unfaithful to him? Whether it's real and he believes it, or whether he's just made this up? It doesn't matter, because he's decided he is going to call her on a charge of adultery. And actually some other things. I believe in the historical context, there was even a charge of plotting to kill the king back in the day. So he has turned his affections toward Jane Seymour, or Giovanna Seymour, in this performance in Anna Bolena. And in our second act, we will discover what happens when Anna learns that Jane Seymour is her rival.
Is her rival, and also, the way it's presented here, Jane Seymour is her lady-in-waiting. We're given to understand that Anne Boleyn was Queen Catherine's lady-in-waiting. So, on the one hand, there is this great rivalry.
Wife.
Yes, there's this great rivalry, and there's also a strange sort of understanding of who this person is, and also, unfortunately, what will happen.
And as Act Two begins, Anne Boleyn, or Anna, is under house arrest. She's consoled by her ladies, but they are ordered to leave her. Jane Seymour, Giovanna, comes to her in private and tells her that she can avoid execution by admitting to the adultery, thereby allowing the king to divorce her and remarry. Anna refuses and curses the woman who will be her successor. And that's when Giovanna confesses that she is that woman. Anna is shocked, but ultimately forgives her rival, at least that's what she says,
right,
placing the blame on the king, not on Giovanna. In the next scene, we learn that Smeaton, or Smeton, has falsely testified to being the queen's lover in a misguided attempt to save her life. Before Anna and Percy are brought before the council, Anna tells the king that she is ready to die, but begs him to spare her the humiliation of a trial. Percy says he and Anna were married before she became the king's wife, a claim which Enrico, or Henry VIII, dismisses, and they are led away. Giovanna pleads for Anna's life, but the king will not yield. The council declares the royal marriage dissolved and sentences Anna and her accomplices to death, but the king sends news to Percy and Rochefort in prison that he is prepared to spare their lives. Both of them refuse to live, however, while Anna dies. Anna, as she faces her execution, is in a state of delirium, imagining herself on her wedding day and then recalling her girlhood love for Percy, when bells and cannon fire are heard announcing the king's new marriage. She suddenly comes to her senses at that moment. She makes it clear that she is full of rage at the king and his new love, while at the same time refusing to curse them publicly, and she bravely walks off to her execution. In order of vocal appearance, Anna Netrebko is Anna Bolena, Eduardo Valdez is Sir Hervey, Ekaterina Gubanova is Giovanna Seymour, Ildar Abdrazakov is Enrico VIII, or Henry VIII, Stephen Costello is Lord Ricardo Percy, Keith Miller is Lord Rochefort, her brother, and Tamara Mumford is Smeaton. Marco Armiliato conducts the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and Chorus in the conclusion of Anna Bolena.
We got to talk about the duet scene, which is at the beginning of this part, but there's so much more in this act. After that, there's a wonderful trio between Enrico and Anna and Giovanna as they sort of face off. Then there's the scene that Ira mentioned, Percy's scene in prison. And Rochefort is also there, but Percy gets this wonderful solo, which has been cut in the past in other productions, but we get to hear it, and it's very powerful and sets us up for the final scene, which is tremendous. This is where we have the mad scene, but that's only part of it. It starts with this beautiful chorus for the ladies in waiting. And then the mad scene, it's not one aria. It's a series of solos for the soprano and that explore so many aspects of what someone would be feeling in that situation. I don't even really like to call it a mad scene because there's not so much madness. There's a retreat from reality, and then she snaps back into it. The first is this introduced by the English horn, which beautiful solo and such an evocative instrument. Really listen for that when she's remembering how her life could have been with loving with Percy. She has a prayer that's very beautiful. And then, of course, at the very end, this outburst, where she says, "I'm not going to curse you. I'm not going to curse you." That's what the words say. You decide what the music says.
The second half of this opera begins in Anne's apartments. A tall window is at the left, and it's letting in cloudy daylight into the room. Any of the light that we see in this production it's just a little too dull to
yes.
say that it's sunlight or even
right.
bright moonlight. It's something that's giving us a feeling of dread. A red four-poster bed, which is very, very tall. It's about 15 feet high, and I'm very bad at estimating, so I'm guessing it's about that tall, is in the room. And at right is a wall that closes off this room, but we can see the other side of the wall where there's a corridor, and Giovanna is standing out there listening in on Anna's torment through the door. Later, we're going to be in the anteroom to the council chamber. When Smeaton is released from questioning, he is in only his tunic and his hose, and he's crippled
yeah.
and covered with blood because he's
it's
been
really
tortured.
It's really grotesque. There's no backing away from it in this production.
His arms are yoked to a plank over his shoulders, and his hands, or maybe they're really supposed to be the stumps of his arms.
Right. Definitely broken.
Without his hands, are bandaged up and bloody. And later in this act, the costume for Henry is resplendent. We talked about the amazing costumes.
Yes.
This is where it's really showing through. Maestro Marco Armiliato is back in the orchestra pit for part two of Anna Bolena in a live broadcast on opening night of the Met.